I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join the journey to explore the past and present of Oak Ridge, Tennessee, the town that was dubbed Secret City. As more than 75,000 workers settled in Oak Ridge during World War II to develop the nuclear bomb.
Oak Ridge was created by the government. No one knew it was even on the map. There was nothing, there wasn't a dot on the map that said Oak Ridge. And for 4 years, nobody knew it was there.
We'll then stop in for a visit at Los Alamos Labs.
It's probably the best known because it was the site of Project Y of the Manhattan Project.
Also formed in total secrecy during World War II to develop the bomb. Both towns continue high-tech research in a myriad of fascinating modalities for the Department of Energy, including environmental issues, 3D printing, and much more. Not far from Los Alamos is White Sands Missile Range, where the first plutonium bomb was detonated at Trinity Site in July 1945.
We're located off of Highway 70, about 35 miles to the east of Las Cruces, New Mexico.
Adjacent is White Sands National Park, with the world's largest array of white sand dunes.
We had people come out here with skis and snowboards. We even had one guy bring out a surfboard with a sail on it.
Katie Jett, the president of the Visitors Bureau in Oak Ridge, Tennessee.
Oak Ridge, Tennessee is unlike anywhere else in America. It really is, and I can say that safely.
Yes, it's unlike anywhere. Mm-hmm. It's truly one of the best-kept secrets still in the country.
And when Oak Ridge first started, it was known as the Secret City, wasn't it?
It was the Secret City.
Literally.
Yes, when Oak Ridge was created by the government, no one knew it was even on the map. There was nothing, there wasn't a dot on the map that said Oak Ridge. And for 4 years, nobody knew it was there.
That's incredible. And yet I was told as many as 45,000 people lived
75,000
here.
75,000 people.
What?
75,000 people.
Wow.
Were moved in within a year of starting the city.
So they managed to build a city housing apartments, whole infrastructure in months.
Yeah, the Army built an entire city, houses, stores, the other things that they had because they were brought in all these young people. They had symphonies, they had movie theaters here, they had dances out on the tennis courts, they had entertainment, they had their own playhouse. They had all types of different culture because they were bringing all these young people in that were very intelligent.
Then you add in the fact that 98% of the people didn't know why they were here.
There were only a handful of people that knew exactly why they were here. The rest of them were just working to help bring our boys back from the war.
Just knew they were doing their part.
They were doing their part to help the country.
But what they were really doing was?
What they were really doing was enriching the uranium that was used in the bombs that we dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
So they only did the kind of the formulation and mixing of the chemicals, and then they shipped it out west from here, right, for testing.
Yeah. Actually, the main thing that they did here was they separated the uranium to only pull out the uranium-235, so that was then sent to Los Alamos, where it was put in the bomb to be used.
So one day, people here woke up and the war was over. And then what? You know, the town could have easily died, but it didn't.
The town could have very easily gone away, which is actually what they thought it was going to do, which is why a lot of the houses were just supposed to be temporary. The laboratory and the other plants here in town, they started working on other projects for the government. And from that point on, Department of Energy took over, and they've been creating unbelievable scientific changes that we've all experienced. Anything from airbags to 3D printing of cars.
Interesting. And so did all that World War II infrastructure go away? Did the base housing go away, or are there still people living in World War II houses?
We still have a lot of the houses that were originally built. They have been redone. All the asbestos taken out of them. They were mostly flat tops. They now have pitch roofs. They've all been remodeled. Those that were actually set up to have two families live in them, walls have been removed. And we still have a lot of those, what the Army called them was alphabet houses, because based on the different house, it was a different alphabetic letter.
So here we are in the here and now in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Does the Oak Ridge Boys have any connection?
That's funny you ask.
I know everybody asks me
Everybody asks that. The original group of men that were the Oak Ridge Boys, yes, there was a connection here. The ones that everybody knows now as the Oak Ridge Boys do not hail from here.
But you could invite them to play here, and then they would...
They have played here.
Oh, okay.
They have
so
played here.
Part of the...
We have a Secret City Festival, and they have played here before.
So tell us about what happens today in Secret City. You know, what's the draw? What's the community? It's a real vital, viable, happening place. I hear nothing but good things about this town.
Yeah. Oak Ridge is still one of the places that all of the country's uranium is still housed here. We still have a lot of security and a lot of high science that's going on. The National Lab has the fastest computer.
So, in the world.
In the world. And there's all kinds of different things that are going on out there that most of us don't know about and won't know about until it's time to actually hit the streets. But there is still so much of the science going on in this town that...
Tell us about things to do. Why would somebody come on a vacation or come to... You have festivals here that would be a big draw.
We do have festivals. Probably the majority of our tourism does have to do around World War II. And
so that is the big draw.
That is the big draw, is the history and then what that history has done and is still doing in our country today. So that's still probably our biggest draw. Then we have museums that go along with all of the history. We have a huge outdoor population that comes in. We have one of the best rowing venues in the country. We have a natural rowing venue that brings in colleges from all across the country.
How did that happen? It just kind of grew by accident?
God put the water here. We didn't do anything to it. We just threw some lanes down it and let them row straight. We have colleges from up north that come down to do all their spring training here. We have a rowing club that is amazing here that actually puts on 8 regattas a year, more than any other venue for rowing in the country. And then we have 4 festivals just in the month of June alone.
Wow. So you guys are no boring moments there.
It's never boring here. There's always something more that you can look, that you can find out, and that you can explore around here. And there's always something, some little secret passageway. We have a storytelling festival that brings in national storytellers. Then we have a Nine Lakes Wine Festival that features only Tennessee-made wines. We have our Secret City Festival, which celebrates the heritage of the city and has a lot of family activities, a lot of scientific activities, and then also has a couple of concerts at night. And then we have a lavender festival, which is the largest lavender festival in the South. We have approximately 11,000 people that just come and descend upon the city for one Saturday.
Wow, just for lavender.
Just a lot of unique restaurants that are one of a kind to us.
Ma and Pa, family owned, they're not chain restaurants.
No, they're not chain restaurants. They're either Ma and Pa owned, or they are owned by families, but maybe they have 3 or 4 of them now that they've grown and grown. But
so they might have something in Knoxville.
They might have something in Knoxville. They might have something.
So if I met you somewhere else and you told me about your town, what would be the first reason you'd tell me to come visit?
I would probably tell you to come because of our history and because it is such a unique thing that nobody else can talk about. I just feel that everybody needs to learn from the history. And then probably second, I would definitely probably go tell you to have some Big Ed's Pizza.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'd have you go have some Big Ed's Pizza. It's up in the original area in town where everybody met, and it's Best pizza there is.
Wow.
Don't expect anything else, though. You get pizza, and you get something to drink, and that's it. And the gentleman who started it, he hired at Risk Youth, and they still work there, even when his son was still alive, and it's still owned by the family.
Well, I hate to let you go, but I think our party's leaving.
Oh, well, I guess so.
Getting quiet down there. For further information,
exploreoakridge.com for all of the information about staying here and about tourism, things that they can do. My name is Katie Jett, and I'm the president of the Visitors Bureau.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you. We're glad you're here, and come back.
I don't want to leave.
Okay, well, we'll find you a place right down here.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Tennessee. We'll see you here. Please join us as we visit with Linda Deck, the director of the Bradbury Science Museum at the Los Alamos National Labs. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
I actually tried to come here in 1978, and I could not find the labs.
I'm so glad you found your way here. We are no longer a secret city or a hidden city. We really like people to know about us here in Los Alamos, so I'm glad you made it.
So here we are at the Bradbury, and this is not the writer Bradbury, another Bradbury museum.
So that usually is the first question. Ray Bradbury? Mm-hmm. No, not Ray Bradbury. Norris Bradbury, who was a scientist during the Manhattan Project here and became the second director of the laboratory and pretty much shaped what the modern laboratory looks like today. Actually, this museum was his idea, and so it's fitting that it's named after him. We're so happy to be the public's window to Los Alamos National Lab. Like I like to say, you know, we're a national nuclear security laboratory, and we can't be a tourist destination. We can't say, y'all come on up and drive around and see what we do. But we do want the public to know the good work that we do and appreciate it, and so that's why the Bradbury's here, to tell that story.
Let's go back in time, for those who don't know, Square One Manhattan Project and how Manhattan got to be in New Mexico.
The Manhattan Project was that project during the war to create a nuclear weapon for our defense. It started in Manhattan, New York. That's why it's called the Manhattan Project. That's where the headquarters was. But there were installations all over the United States, notably Oak Ridge, Tennessee, where uranium work was going on, Hanford, Washington, where the plutonium works were. But this place right here in Los Alamos is probably the best known because it was the site of Project Y of the Manhattan Project, that was designated as the place to design and develop the first atomic weapon.
Top secret.
Yes, it absolutely was. And, you know, it's fascinating. By the end of the Manhattan Project up here on the Mesa, there were over 3,000 people working here. The word never got out that people were up here and what they were doing. It's just an amazing bit of good wartime patriotism and security to keep that secret.
Let's move into today. What's happening in Los Alamos National Labs? You are doing some incredible genomic testing research, and tell us what's going on here today.
You know, it's really fantastic that we have this system of national laboratories across our country that does basic primary research to forward our understanding of science and then build technologies. Because we've got terrific facilities and terrific capabilities in materials research, in understanding fundamental physical forces, and also our computing capabilities are basically second to none.
Well, the second smartest computer in the world right here?
We broke the petaflop barrier with our Roadrunner about a year and a half ago, and a petaflop is a million billion calculations a second. As you said, we do climate change modeling here. We do genomic work here. We've got a very good, rigorous program here on understanding the evolution of the HIV virus. And you can only do that kind of work when you do have big computing capabilities to run those big data sets.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that on one level, where the funding comes from and what the point of the exercise has to do with national security, has to do with bioterrorism and preparedness. So you guys are really a defense agency, and yet the end result, just like a lot of things that came out of the Vietnam War, helped common man, the greater humanity. Tell us about some of the spin-offs of the defense work going on here.
Right, you've absolutely hit it on the head. One of my favorite programs that we've got going on here, well, material sciences. basically just the elements at their most deepest level is something that we do here. Our physicists, our chemists, our material scientists do great work. We've had a program on superconducting materials here for a long time. So our program to understand those materials, develop new combinations of materials, how do you work with those materials? How do you lay it down in a flawless fashion so that it can be used? We work out those basic kinds of questions, and then we push it out to the public sector so it can be commercialized and you can use those technologies. And those technologies are being used right now in demonstration projects on this continent and across the world.
Let's come back to the museum. Mm. You have all these different little tentacle rooms with different things going on. Tell us what somebody would see and experience here.
So when you come into the museum, you have your choice where to begin the story. Like a lot of people, I'm a chronological person, so I like to start my visit with the history. And so we have a history gallery that has an extensive treatment of what was going on politically and scientifically in the 1930s that pretty much conspired to create a Manhattan Project, that fission had been discovered, and the Germans certainly had that knowledge, and we ought to be working on looking at those materials as well. And so the Manhattan Project was started, and that gallery tells you that entire story from the scientific side of it all the way through what was going on in the entire Manhattan Project, what was going on here at Los Alamos, the people who were involved, and what happened to end the war. Our defense gallery picks up the story, picks it up notably with full-scale models of Fat Man and Little Boy, which were the products of Project Y, and then goes on and shows you other projects that we worked on when we were asked to continue understanding nuclear materials and how they could be used for our defense. And then our job today, which is called stockpile stewardship, looking at our stockpile of nuclear weapons, assessing them without nuclear testing. Remember, we've been abiding by a ban for a long time, so there's no critical testing. And so we employ our facilities, our capabilities to use various kinds of tests to ensure that the stockpile is safe, secure, and reliable. And then our third gallery looks at basically all those other things that we do in global security, in the bio threat research that we talked about, looking at HIV and anthrax, energy security, different kinds of energy strategies that we're looking at and problems that we're solving in wind energy, solar energy, geothermal energy, nuclear energy. And then we have a hands-on room called Tech Lab, where you can try your hand at a lot of different activities that simulate the kinds of things that a scientist must use to approach a problem and figure out what to do next. You bet. This is a museum that we know that visitors from 9 to 90 can enjoy.
Los Alamos intentionally is way off the interstate. You don't just drive through the area. You have to want to come too. Who comes here?
I'll tell you what, our visitors are really an international audience. We have over 80,000 visitors a year to the museum, and yes, they do have to find their way up here. That's why it was sited here back in Manhattan Project days, because people couldn't get up here very easily. 60 to 70% of our visitors all year are from outside the region and are coming in.
Linda, we're out of time, but this has been absolutely awesome. For further information, if somebody wanted to go to your website or contact you.
lanl.gov/museum will get you to our website. We'd love to have you visit.
Thank you, Linda.
You're very welcome, Tom. Thank you.
We've been speaking with Linda Deck, the director of the Bradbury Science Museum at Los Alamos National Labs in New Mexico. The town of Las Cruces is situated in southeastern New Mexico, set amidst the striking realm of the Chihuahuan Desert. Las Cruces and the surrounding country is a tempting destination. It's a place where the chili pepper is most definitely king. Enticing was to explore the nearby White Sands National Monument and the adjacent White Sands Missile Range. I'm Tom Wilmer at White Sands Missile Range. Join me for a visit with Public Affairs Officer Lisa Blevins.
This is United States Army Headquarters, White Sands Missile Range, New Mexico. A modern missile, symbol of America's power, progress, and hope for the future.
My name is Lisa Blevins. I'm a public affairs specialist with the White Sands Missile Range Public Affairs Office at White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico. We're now visiting the White Sands Missile Range Museum.
Tell us about where you're located for somebody visiting New Mexico and how they would get here, number one.
We're located off of Highway 70, about 35 miles to the east of Las Cruces, New Mexico, and perhaps 45 miles to the west of Holloman Air Force Base or Alamogordo, New Mexico.
Is this open to the public? Access to the base, is it easy or a hard process?
Well, the installation itself is not open to the public. However, the museum and our missile park and our V-2 rocket display are all open to the public. All you need to do is present a valid photo ID card for anyone over the age of 16, and they'll let you walk in. If you want to drive, you have to show proof of insurance and current registration for your vehicles.
And is there a fee for entrance to the museum?
Absolutely not. The fee is free.
Let's dovetail back in time, because Trinity site is not too far from here, and White Sands has a relationship with the development of the first nuclear bomb. Actually, I saw Fat Man out in your static display.
Well, and we have a room in here that you can visit that shows you scale model replicas of the area. Trinity Site Open House, we have it open to the public twice a year. It's on the first Saturday in April and the first Saturday in October. It is free. All you have to have is a show of photo ID card and proof of insurance and registration for your vehicles. The Northern Gate opens at 8 o'clock in the morning and closes at 2, and you can reach that off of Highway 380. The southern entrance, it becomes a caravan, and if you contact the Alamogordo Chamber of Commerce, we have between 2,000 and 3,000 people that come every year. It's a time for folks to go to Ground Zero and see where the blast was actually took place.
There's a big crater there, I assume?
No, there isn't. The gadget, as they called it, was 100 feet off the ground. Mm-hmm. So it left kind of depression, maybe 6 to 8 feet. There are still pieces of Trinitite there. It has been designated as a National Historic Landmark. The event brings all kinds of people. There are photos along the fence that they can see. You know, the world changed from that point when mm-hmm. that explosion took place.
Yeah, it changed our world.
It did. It changed the dynamics of the entire world. Mm-hmm. And it really pushed us right into the atomic age.
Mm-hmm. Is there nuclear radiation out there? Is it safe?
The radiation around Ground Zero is about 10 times over our background. You actually get far more than that when you fly coast to coast on an aircraft over 30,000 feet. If it weren't safe, we obviously would not open it to the public.
Well, very good. What an honor and a pleasure to come out here. Thank you so much.
Well, we're pleased to have you here, and we hope that people will come and see. This is where our history came from. Everything that's been used in our Department of Defense has been tested here, and we have a phenomenal group of... If you have any questions, please call us at 575-678-1134 or visit our website at wismer.army.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York, and in fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So yes, please support your local NPR station.